back with episode 398 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
Edmund from Greenville. But who are you guys again? I can't quite seem to remember.
This is Gary from Jacksonville, and just tell me it's just a rash, and you know, don't kiss me either, okay?
And this is Runsum from Australia, and sure, it's just a rash.
Yeah, absolutely. And well, I'm fairly sure that if there's an alternate universe where I get to have a relationship with Kenzie, I'm all for it. Anyway, we are going to be talking about all kinds of things, and obviously a little bit of Helix and Lost Girl, but I'm guessing that we're going to jump all over the place as well with some of these other shows that we still haven't gotten to. But first, Edmund, before we spoil anything more...
That is our policy around here. We will spoil you silly just so we can talk about absolutely anything in the episodes, but we have tried to wait a week or so before we do that, so we certainly hope you've caught up.
That's right. And, well, last time we gave Gary the opportunity to pick what the last topic of our last show was going to be, so I think it's now Bronstum's turn. Bronstum, what do you want to start with this time?
Well, since it was mentioned, I wouldn't mind hearing everyone's thoughts on the beginning of Helix.
Okay, sounds good to me. There's actually two episodes, one premiere, that is covered here. So I think we're just going to run the promo for that two-parter and then jump into each one individually. But anyway, here's the promo. Right, and Bronstum, if you could get us started with the first of the two episodes.
Okay, Helix Season 1, Episode 1, Pilot. Really original there, guys. A team of scientists are thrust into a potentially life-or-death situation after being deployed to the Arctic to secretly investigate what could be a disease outbreak. I didn't necessarily have very high hopes coming into this show. I knew a bit about the pedigree, but it struck me as, like, a bit too much of a riff on The Thing and the kind of story that you couldn't necessarily drag out for a whole season, even if it was just a relatively short season. And it wasn't until they actually got to the Arctic, which was relatively soon into the episode, that they started winning me over with not just, I thought, strong production values, but with a style, like a really visual style, and the use of the music and all that kind of stuff that really gave me the creeps, just a little, just enough that I was kind of getting into the vibe of the show. And you know, the more I got into that vibe, the more I appreciated the mystery behind what this disease is, or I say disease, this thing that's... Well, we'll get to in the next episode. I'm curious about what it is, about what caused it, about the secrecy surrounding these biological experiments. What's up with the people running the base? What's up with the people from the CDC who have come? It feels really like we've been plopped down in the middle of the story, in the best way. Forget the 20 minutes with jerks that comes at the beginning of every horror movie. We're just going to go straight to, you know, people's guts liquefying and you know, klaxons blaring and all that kind of fun stuff that comes in these kinds of stories, and pick up the characterization and stuff like that as we go. And that can totally be a bad thing if you don't care enough about the characters when bad stuff starts happening. You just don't wind up caring a toss about the story. But I thought they did a solid enough job of making me interested in these characters at the same time as interested in these mysteries that I was surprisingly engaged with this first episode.
Gary, how about you?
I thought the Sci-Fi Saturday pedigree was showing through this a lot, in my opinion. The first episode seemed everywhere from corny, where he's throwing around the fake infectious virus to the in the CDC boardroom, to not locking down this facility at all in any way, shape, or form as a infected person is starting to go through the whole thing. I really had to suspend any sort of common sense knowledge or expectation of medical competency to get through this first episode. It just left me weak. That being said, it's not that the premise was bad, but even things like the I know there's supposed to be mysterious motivations of the leader of this this outpost. It didn't even leave me curious. I just seemed like this guy's like a schmuck or an idiot, or you know, he just wants everybody dead. And I just didn't see any purpose to what was going on in it, and it kept taking me out of the show. Even the acting I thought was a little on the cheesy side. Obviously, they're trying to set stuff up, but it didn't seem like it was set up that well to me. Some of the personal interactions, like finding out that the head of the team knew the infected patient, but we didn't find that out till he's actually sitting there reading his listening to the guy's journal. And it seemed like they could have laid the character basis a lot earlier on than they did. And it just struck me as poor writing. I can't say I enjoyed this first episode.
Evan, how about you?
Yeah, I think I may be in between Ron Slum and Gary. I did think visually it was stunning, and certainly that sense of opening up with that that mysterious lead-in with the nice boppy 60s songs going on in the background was. Certainly in intriguing and off-putting, but I think my issue, I wasn't necessarily finding it as egregious as Gary was, but it was feeling very familiar. I know because of the Arctic setting, the thing is what people keep have kept bringing up as a comparison. Certainly with all that, the antiseptic base, the Andromeda strain is the other one that was...
Yeah, that echoed...
ringing a lot of bells, and certainly with the head of the base being this mysterious character who's obviously keeping secrets and doing experiments that aren't above board, and I mean, as they made clear in that opening scene, it is just pilot, and I think there is, and I certainly agree with Bronslow in terms of I think one reason why I wasn't keying on some of the points Gary's bringing up was I did get a very creepy sense as the episode progressed, and so they did do a good job of suspending some of my critical faculties as I was getting more and more weirded out by what was going on. We always talk about the whole pilotitis syndrome, and so I was also willing to give them a little bit of slack and until we get into more of the run of the episodes, and that they can get past all this setup. So I'm cautiously optimistic that there could be more there, but the other factor is also that this is not the sort of genre that usually really grabs me. So they're going to have to do a very good job to get me make sure they keep my interest.
Yeah, the thought that was going through my head through the entire thing was that this felt like an extended version of the early cutscenes of a survival horror game. Because you've got people that are trapped in this isolated facility, you've got the atmospheric darkness and the, you know, matched with the antiseptic nature of any type of lab environment. You've got the weird 60s music playing in the background that's completely atonal to everything else that's going on. And yeah, it's trying to be dissonant in terms of how you're reacting to what's going on, because it's not what you're expecting in every sense. And yet I can't help but think that this is The Thing meets The X-Files, because it's essentially that episode Ice, the Black Oil, and Thing, and The Thing wrapped all together, with a little bit of the Andromeda Strain in terms of the intrigue behind, okay, where did this virus come from? But yeah, it's kind of, that's the familiar part of all of this. I like the cast fairly well, although they still feel like they're trying to gel at this point. And with a show that's clearly going to be heavily serialized, it's a little more apparent when the cast is still trying to find their footing. But, I mean, to me, a lot of the problems were standard pilot stuff. There was an awful lot of exposition that they had to do in this episode. Character introductions and everything else. And yeah, it took a little while for the mood of the show to kind of get past the needs of any first episode. So I don't know. To me, again, I have my usual thoughts on what a pilot can and cannot achieve, and what it takes to get beyond the standard weaknesses of a pilot. I don't know, Gary, I guess the question I would kind of knock back to you is, do you think that these were problems that were pilot-related, or that were specifically weaknesses to the way that the show began? Or the premise, I guess you could say, just the structure of the show.
It was really sort of the structure. You know, Edmund sort of touched on it, that there were a lot of familiarities with it, almost too many. You know, the leader of the outpost seems almost, I could almost see him twisting his mustache type of things. He just seems so sneaky and slimy, and yeah, it seemed like a trope. The you know, these CDC people, I had gotten the sense that at least the head of it was supposed to be, like, really smart, on top of his game. Like, you know, that's why they send him to places like this, and he seems utterly incompetent. It did not seem well put together. And I'm not even talking – I don't mind the exposition. I don't mind, oh, so you spent 6 months in Paris. Oh, that's because you love the city so much. You know, I don't even mind that type of, you know, blatant character-laying type of, you know, situation or things along those lines. But it was just really tacky. And as I said earlier, it reminded me of, like, an extended, you know, one of their Saturday night movies. It's not quite over the top like a Sharknado, but good gosh, like a Lake Placid or something like that was the quality I was sort of getting out of it. And – yeah, you know, sci-fi has done such good things, you know, as you'll look back at, you know, or even look at, like, Warehouse 13 or, you know, or some of their other shows, that they can produce good stuff, and this just seemed beneath them.
Interesting. Any rebuttals to that, guys? You even want to attempt a rebuttal to that, guys?
I don't know. I guess I disagree about the production values, and I'm totally aware that part of my opinion is that I'm bundling. In my head, I'm not really separating the first and second episodes from one another, and there was the fact that I just went in with very, very low expectations, and they were exceeded by a lot, I think. But I didn't have a problem with the production budget, that sort of sense of the presentation or something like that, and I didn't. The actions of the characters and stuff like that didn't strike me as particularly stupid or unprofessional, even though I'm sure that you know, anyone who actually works in that field would be, you know, rolling their eyes and whatnot. But it worked within. It didn't immediately jump out at me as completely idiotic, and therefore I went with it because I was already going with the story.
Okay, well, before we move on to the second half, because I think it would be easier if we were able to move on from just the very beginning. Bronson, what would you give the first episode? If you can deconflate them, so to speak.
I don't know. I think a 7. Okay. I'm aware that it's not perfect, and you know, there's sort of room for improvement and stuff like that, and that it does have some pilot iris problems, but at the same time, I was entertained. I was along for the ride, and I did not expect to have that reaction from this episode.
And Gary, how about you?
I'm going to go with a 5 for the first part. It was really poor in a lot of ways for me. I thought they, even as a pilot, could have done a much better job.
And Edmund, how about you?
I will go with a 6, just to not just to give us a full range, but I know that's usually your default for pilots, and I felt it pretty much hit that default.
Yeah, I would agree. So let's see if the second half did any better. Bronstam, if you could do the honors of the recap and then launch us into it.
No worries. Helix, Season 1, Episode 2, Vector. Dr. Alan Farragut and his team work to treat the outbreak patients and contain the virus, while at the same time a rebellion erupts at the Arctic Biosystems base. And this one sort of jumped into one of those classic, outbreak story tropes of, you know, the people in quarantine, in isolation, trying to get out.
Mm-hmm.
And I was impressed with the way they let this whole storyline play out, of the balance between the increasing instability of the people inside the inside quarantine, with the way that the doctor, whose name completely escapes me right now, was trying to handle the situation, and just. Yeah, like that particular aspect of the episode, I thought, like, it's tied and true, it's very cliche, but they did a decent job of presenting it. And in the meantime, we have this running storyline of what the hell's happening with the brother, Peter, who is scampering all around this base, apparently having gotten pretty strong and pretty fast and pretty darn creepy.
Mm-hmm.
And, It deepened my curiosity as to what exactly is going on with this thing that they're making, this compound, this disease, this whatever it is that Peter's been infected with. It dialed up my interest in finding answers, my curiosity, my investment in the core questions and mysteries of the show. I'm like, within the space of, by the time this 2-hour premiere was over, I was perfectly, I'm perfectly ready to go along with the whole season, to just go along for the ride and find out what's going on and stuff like that. And it may be that towards the end it just completely sputters and dies, but for the moment I thought it's been doing a really, really good job of getting me invested and getting me interested in what's going on.
Gary, how about you?
I liked the second hour a lot more than the first. I enjoyed the tension with the supposedly infected or contagious staff members. I thought that was really good. As they started to show sort of the transmission and some of the more deliberate purposefulness of the spreading of the disease, I thought that was well handled. It seemed that people are having a sense that there actually is something wrong and they should be worried now. And so it started to pull things back a lot for me. I guess he's an army guy, you know, going out trying to cover up different things like that were outside of the base, like that scene with the monkeys, I believe was the second hour. That was a very strong, powerful scene. I like that a lot. And you get the sense that it's what's going on now is planned. It seemed a little bit more carefree, but a little bit more wild perhaps in the beginning of this, the first hour. But the second hour, you start to have a sense that, everything is happening for a purpose now. What that purpose is or why, you're not quite sure yet, but you know, things aren't random at this point. And I like that there's there's attempting to be some thought behind what's going on in this, base.
Mm-hmm. Evan, how about you?
Yeah, no, I thought, as they started getting into the story, it was definitely improving. Both the storyline that's been mentioned with the quarantine people and the complex with them, and also the detective work is starting and they're tracking down the secret labs from the very opening, and the monkeys and their cages, and doing a very good job of heightening the tension, both with the using some things like jump cuts, but not overusing them. And then I thought that whole sequence of, besides the fact that I've always had a sort of mild claustrophobia, so anytime you start doing those, having to hunt people through ducts and tunnels and things is always going to get me very nervous. And I thought as they were trying to track Peter down. That worked very well to ramp up the tension, and then certainly when he finally appeared and does that whole leap back up into the vents, was a very, very good job of letting us know just how strange and twisted and mutated or whatever it is that's going on he's become. So I thought it was a nice step up from the pilot and dragging us into the strange world that these people are apparently going to have to try and battle their way out of, you know, whether physically, intellectually, whatever. So yeah, so a nice setup after that first hour.
Mm. Yeah, I would agree. I mean, there were a lot of, I think that the second hour they settled in a lot more, and that's probably the part that was important to me, that instead of having to introduce so much, they could actually just play with things, and it felt like, yeah, that it was a little bit more, it was smooth versus what was going on previously when they were starting to drop in even more of the exposition. Yes, there was still some because this was only the second episode, but yeah, it still worked out pretty well as far as I was concerned. Let's see if is there anything else about this particular episode that we want to discuss, or do we just want to go ahead and okay, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I mean, the very end there, I actually liked, after in the setup and the exposition where it seemed they were getting a little too incestuous and soap opery with the ex-wife, and she's involved with Farragut and with Peter, and but then the way that was used for when he then appears in the shower, and it's that very creepy scene of where he is apparently infecting her, that was a very nice use of that past history to make that situation actually work a lot better than it might have otherwise. So,
Yeah, to say the least, that scene, as much as it had been established earlier on, brought some of the. This is an odd association, but who here remembers the John Carpenter film Prince of Darkness? Anyone? No. The highlight of that was, number one, it was in the 80s, and so I was relatively young, and so it was fairly memorable. But the villain, so to speak, of that film was euphemistically Liquid Satan. And so it would be transmitted from person to person in various ways, and one of the more chilling ways was when this couple that had been in a relationship, one of them was infected and chose to kind of transmit it through a kiss, and, you know, there was that awkwardness of this being, you know, so, this relationship and yet something extremely sinister taking place. This was definitely along the same lines, and it reminded me a lot of that film for whatever reason, but, it is interesting that you've got this semi-sentient virus going on here that is willing its victims into transmitting through the most direct means possible. It's kind of an interesting direction for it to take. Let's just put it that way. Anyway, strange associations aside, Brunstone, what would you give this one?
I agree with Gary's very first thing, but this was the second half was stronger than the first half. Although I'm not 100% sure of where the I'm blanking exactly where the transition was. Although I know there was that title card from day one to day two, but yeah, the second half, it didn't have as much exposition. It sort of got more into the story. It delivered more of the creep. It was just really good. So I'm happy to bump my rating from the previous episode up to an 8 for this one.
Okay, Gary, how about you?
I'm gonna bring it up to 7. I thought it was a lot better. Still plenty of range to go, but definite improvement. I hope it keeps up.
Okay, and Edmund, how about you?
Yeah, I will bump up to a 7 as well.
Okay, and I think I would agree with that. So, yeah, it looks like we all definitely felt like the second half was much stronger than the first. All right, so we are going to then go ahead and move on to our next topic, and I think, Edmund, it is your turn this time.
Alrighty, let's talk about the return of Arrow.
Ah, good pick, and let's go ahead and run the promo.
You never know what's coming for you.
I can't save you both.
You really need to learn how to shear.
Uh-huh.
It's called death. He's coming for you. We all gotta die someday. Am I chasing my destiny or running from it?
Lost Girl. New season premieres Sunday, November 10th at 10, only on Showcase.
All right, and Edmund, if you could.
This is Arrow Season 2, Episode 10, Blast Radius. Shrapnel sets off bombs in Starling City and selects Sebastian Blood's Unity Rally as his next target. Arrow tries to stop the bombing, but Shrapnel traps him in a bomb-laced antique store. Meanwhile, Thea demands answers from Roy after she witnesses his super strength, and Laurel's suspicions about Sebastian grow stronger when she learns that he grew up with Cyrus Gold, the man who killed Lance's partner. And, of course, the return after the big reveals of that mid-season finale, and the biggest one, of course, being that that Slade is in fact alive and in Starling City. So of course he's the one person we don't see yet, but this was more focusing on really establishing Blood's role in the plot and furthering his ambitions and setting up certainly this should say potentially, but we know potentially as in we know it's going to be problematic. Alliance with the Arrow, as they're now calling him. They're getting closer and closer to that name, just sneaking up on it. I felt that where it was strongest, this episode was strongest, was in the character dynamics in the team. I particularly liked with Oliver getting so ticked off at Felicity, and with her being off in Central City with the areas he's recovering, and we guess not quite having become the Flash yet, that dynamic between the three of them, between Felicity and Oliver and Diggle, has been one of the strengths of the show, and I thought they were really building on it, because it is as far as the actual villain of the week, I really felt that Shrapnel was a bit of a throwback to some of those problems from the first season, of where it was literally villain of the week coming in and getting defeated relatively easily. Although I actually did like the whole concept of it being that teamwork between Oliver and Felicity, when Felicity realizing it's a 70-year is building, and so you can take the electronics out. So that I thought worked rather well. But what did you guys think of it?
Well, I will just say, as a start off, before I pass this on to Bronstone, is that I was a little bit disturbed by how we have yet another good guest actor. Not Seth Gable this time, but Sean Mayer, of course, that plays this maniacal character a little over the top, and when a more subtle approach would have probably worked better, at least for me. How about you, Bronstone? Any differences of opinion with...
No, I had that same thought, that they brought in Sean Mayer, and aside from the obvious thing of like not giving him any scenes with Summer Glau, was just, it was a really over-the-top, maniacal, one-dimensional role for an actor who can do so much better. And Arrow's got a history of doing this. It's one of the few ongoing problems that you can pick at the show. In the first season, you not only had Seth Gable, you had James Callis, you had David Anders. There are probably others that I'm completely blanking on, but just, really good actors who we know can bring a lot of nuance to their role. And don't really get the chance, and it was a shame how one dimensional that this villain wound up being.
Yeah, definitely. I too felt like the relationship between Oliver and Felicity was a nice touch. I think that bringing her up as a more prominent member of the team this season has been a really good decision. And certainly not just for the reasons that are obvious, but I think that giving him someone other than Diggle to bounce off of and to interact with on a regular basis gives him a lot. It keeps Oliver grounded as far as his character beats are concerned. If there was one character that this season, I really just don't like where her story is headed. It's almost as if they inverted Laurel and what's the sister's name? I'm blanking on it right now.
Thea.
Yeah. It's almost like they inverted. They've done so much for Thea and her storyline, and I really kind of like where they're going here because she's now connected to what's going on with Roy, and having had the nickname Speedy before, you can almost see where this is all falling into place. Meanwhile, we've got Laurel just kind of in the background. It's almost like because we know that eventually something has to happen with Sarah Lance and everything else and Black Canary with her, that they have to keep her kind of spinning her wheels in the meantime. And they've done so much for all the other characters, including, you know, Laurel's father. They've done a lot of good work with him this season. I really wonder why they can't seem to find something good for this character to do, other than a little bit of investigating in the background, which isn't really going anywhere quite yet.
So, yeah, and popping pills at the beginning of a scene, at least.
Yeah. Which, you know, I guess it would be interesting if they were to go a different way with the whole whichever character gets drug addicted, even though they have established that Thea has issues with that already. But, you know, it could just be that they're planning something with Laurel later down the road and it just hasn't happened yet. But, man, it's still the weakness, and it didn't help this episode that there were other weaknesses as well. What am I forgetting to mention here? Because I feel like a lot happened, but maybe the guest star kind of brought this one down a little bit in terms of making it memorable. I feel like it wasn't a terrible episode by any means, but I certainly enjoyed the return of it. But I think maybe coming out of that previous episode with the Slade reveal made this seem a little bit like a step backward. Would you agree with that, Bronstam, or am I being a little bit too harsh on it?
No. It's I've sort of been saying that about Laurel for a little bit now. Just I thought that character was really quite I'm completely blanking on words now. Really bland and really kind of pointless and not doing as much to contribute to the overall story or growing as much as a character as you would expect of someone who has such a prominent role within the ensemble. That's problem with computer muck up there. That problem there. We had the problem with the guest star. We had little things like little things that just sort of let the team down, so to speak. All the other, you know, so many things that we like about Arrow, the strength of the of most of the main cast, of the characterization of Oliver and his little team, how it presents this version of the DC Comics universe and stuff like that, for the most part, is all working really, really well. They're continuing to build a storyline of this season. We're seeing the stuff with Slade on the island, how he's beginning to change. We're getting this sort of insight into what probably went down between him and Oliver. We're seeing the development of Roy into, more and more of a, you know, potential superhero in his own right. And, you know, we had a bit of a reveal at the end of just, you know, the obvious, the audience at this point knows that that Blood is not a character to trust, but the characters who have for some reason completely missed any potential badness surrounding his, you know, name, starting to pick up on how he might not necessarily be a good guy. So there were minor developments, there were some problems. It was not the strongest episode by a long shot, but still not bad. I feel like we're finding a lot of things to rag on it about, and it's very easy to miss the usual, you know, the fun things about Arrow that were, you know, present and accounted for.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it's a case of they had hit such a high at the mid-season there that we're just feeling that little bit of disappointment that it's taken a bit of a step back, but it's a step back to being average as far as I'm concerned, and just not it's not gotten bad. It's just not as good as it had gotten.
Mm, yeah, that's probably a good way of putting it. So what would you give this one, do you think, Bronson?
I think I'd go for the 7.
Okay, and that's what I would go with as well. I think, yeah, I mean, and Edmund, to your point, we're going from really a 10 of a midseason finale down to an average 7, and that's probably why it feels just so like such a drop. But what would you give it, do you think?
Yeah, no, I'd give it that good old average 7.
Okay, well, there you go. All right, well, that being the case, I think that, you know, we've let Gary have enough of a break. I think it's his time to jump back in. And let's first of all check. I think it may be time for our mid-show break, and yes, it is. So let's go ahead and do that first. Stay tuned. Okay, and as promised, Gary, what would you like to cover next?
I almost hate to take this one away from you, John, but I did enjoy the episode a lot. I want to talk about Lost Girl.
Okay, no problem. And let's go ahead and run the promo.
I trust in you.
To save a brother.
Crowley could cast the angel out.
They'll have to deal with the devil.
I save Sam.
I leave here a free man.
You can't be considering this.
I can rip this body apart.
We'll do this the fun way.
Supernatural returns with an all-new episode Tuesday, January.
And Gary, if you could.
Yes, we're talking about Lost Girl, Season 4, Episode 1, In Memoriam. A case of stolen memory hits close to home in the Season 4 opener. At the same time, the new Morgan intends on putting some past events permanently out of mind. Welcome to the Kenzie Show. Yeah. We've been asking for it for several seasons now, and they finally listened to us and given it to us. Kenzie takes control of this episode, I think. I really enjoyed it, much as we had talked about being human. This shook up the status quo a fair bit for this episode. Nobody seemed to really be acting in character as themselves, and it was nice. It wasn't out of the body swap or anything like that, but it was definitely a little bit out of the ordinary, and it took me off guard going into a show that I figured, oh, I know what's going to go on. So it shook me up a lot. So, John, did you like seeing Kenzie this much of Kenzie?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm ready for the actual Kenzie show. certainly, this was a great way for the season to start from my perspective. I do want to say, though, that as much as I enjoyed it, and I don't want to take anything away from that, this was such a strange way to start the season, because I usually, you know, require or hope that that first episode back is going to maybe ease us in so that I can remember what happened at the end of the previous season. I had no idea what was going on. I was so confused. And but, you know, at the end of the day, it was confused in actually a fairly nice way. It all did start to come together in the end. And yeah, I can't say that I was too upset by having an episode that was mostly centered around Kenzie. I was like, oh, wait, this is where the show's going? No problem. I can do this.
Well, she's been, you know, everyone has loved her, loved the actress in her character in the show. And so we talked out. It seemed like she was out of one or two episodes at the end of last season. So, you know, it's nice to give her this sort of this focus. Definitely the fans, you know, clamor for her. So I didn't mind the focus. I could live with it for maybe every third episode or so.
Yeah. Bronstom, I know that you did the reviews for this, so what did you think of this opening?
I thought it was just such a fantastic way to kick off the fourth season. I mean, on top of you've just got the basically fun things of like suddenly making it the Kenzie show, and just just the opening of the episode before the main credits of just, I think everyone, ideally we would have had everyone watch with a timer and see how long it took them into the episode to sort of cotton onto the idea of like, all right, okay, something messed up has gone on and it's mucked up with everybody and whatnot, because there's just that increasing sense of okay, now I'm with you. It was the good kind of confusion, and it was really well put together. It gave the character, all the other characters, a chance to kind of like step to the left of their normal role for a little bit, and it did a brilliant job of setting things up for the season to come by giving us these, rather than just jumping into the cliffhanger of the previous season. It gave us additional things to worry about, and then sort of veered, you know, took a sharp left, you know, back into that. Into that cliffhanger at the very end. And yeah, I thought it was an incredibly strong episode. One of my favorites of the show, I think. And I could have stayed in this version of the Lost Girl universe for a while longer.
Mm. Yeah. Certainly, especially when we start getting into some of the other episodes, I'm sure we're going to feel that way too, because it's almost like you went someplace special. I couldn't just stay there. But anyway, Edmund, how about you? Anything to add here?
Yeah, I did want to mention that one thing that helped me out a lot, because it has been a long time since the show was gone, was there was actually an episode that was aired in Canada, a sort of pre-show catch up with they've done this on a fairly regular basis, but it was the cast all gathered in the doll, sort of giving a recap of what had happened, and showing all the webisodes that had been put out in between these two seasons, and that helped a lot to sort of get my head back into what exactly was going on at the end. But just as we were preparing for this show, I did discover, because I was aware that Anna Silk had had a baby, but apparently she was still on maternity leave when the season opened. So part of this was them having to work around that. So, but I think if it was that necessity, being the mother of invention, I did really enjoy this concept of coming back to Lost Girl with no Beau, as Bronson mentioned, having that slow realization of, wait a minute, she's not only not here, but nobody knows her, and having to work through that while at the same time. This show has always liked throwing its cast the curveballs. As we mentioned in previous seasons, they've done one of the best body swap episodes ever. It was very nice to give everybody else a chance to play in this different way, and at the same time, kind of set us off on this new mystery. It was certainly a very unusual return, but one that showed that the show is still keeping its best qualities.
Yeah, it's definitely a good start, and it's interesting that you mentioned the fact that she was just coming off of maternity leave actually when she started filming for this season, for the next episode, obviously, because that's something that I completely forgot about. And but it's something that, in a very interesting way, as I'm sure we'll talk about as we go. Spoilers, everyone. it's kind of obvious that some kind of body change took place, and it threw me for a loop at first, because I was like, what's going on here? And then I looked into it, and it's amazing that she came back as quickly as she did to the show. And I like the fact that the producers, while they didn't exactly it's not like they basically didn't really do too much outside of accommodating what they had to accommodate, but they kind of just let it go. They didn't try to, hide anything.
Just threw her into dresses primarily.
They made small little changes, but nothing too huge. I mean, they made sure that her wardrobe kind of was adjusted to do the best that they could with what, nature was providing them. But it's interesting to see as the season progresses, because obviously we're talking about this having, we're talking about it on the U.S. schedule, but we've been obviously blessed with plenty of visits to Canada. Let's just put it that way.
Well, just for people who are listening, we are reviewing it with the U.S. Debuts of the shows, but Canada is almost done with this season, more than halfway, I believe. So
that's right. Yeah, they're well on their way. It is going to be interesting to see what kind of reactions come out of that, and because they are so just nonchalant almost in the way that they handle it very, very well, in my opinion. All right, so I'm sorry, did we get sidetracked completely with discussions? What I think you gave it a 9, Bronstam.
Your review. Happily.
Gary.
This was a fantastic return.
How about you, Gary?
Oh, I'm giving a 9 just for the dance scene alone. Bravo.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, it was a great episode.
And Edmund?
I'll go a 9 as well, and we'll just say that one of the things that knocked the point off was one of the more disappointing guest appearances by George Takei I ever could have imagined.
Oh yes, 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 yes. I'll be nice though and not factor that into my 9. How's that? Let that go. as much as we can, anyway. It's a really strong start to the season. We'll see how it goes from here. All right, and that means that we still have a little bit of time left in this show, so we can go back around to Bronstam. What do you want to jump into? We have 3 choices left.
Indeed we do, and I think we might jump back into Supernatural.
Okay, sounds good to me. Let's go ahead and run that promo. All right, Bronze Thumb, go for it.
All right. I'm getting really annoyed with my microphone setup. Just heads up to the audience. Supernatural Season 9, Episode 10, Road Trip. Dean hunts the angel who killed Kevin and tries to separate Sam's brain from an angel's mind in order to expel Gadriel. However, the only person who knows how to do that is Crowley.
Mm-hmm.
And awesome, because any excuse to have more Crowley is all good.
Any excuse to have more Crowley and Castiel. Yeah, in the same scene, no less. Let me just say, for me, I'll just start right off with it. This was the best episode of the season, in my opinion. This was Supernatural finally getting back where they belong. Because this season has been a rough, rough go. Easily the worst start to a season that they've ever had. At least certainly in the last several seasons. So for me, this was a really good return to form after they took a nice step up with the mid-season finale. Bronstum, you agree?
Yeah, this was really strong. This was all about putting the characters together in interesting ways and letting story drive the episode and letting all of the big things going on in the Supernatural universe be front and center. And it's what I've been wanting out of the show from, you know, the beginning of season 9, and it felt like we weren't getting.
Mm-hmm.
There was just so much going on, and it was all strong, it was all solid, and it all set up the, what's to come in the season to follow. The idea of not one, but two civil wars going on, with the Winchesters being sort of like more caught up in the middle than ever before, except that it looks like they've gone their separate ways, and not for the first time, but for what feels like the most legitimate reason yet, which is just a very, very personal betrayal that's born out of the destructive and self-destructive behavior that's driven these characters from the very beginning of the show. This was character-driven storytelling that furthered the main plot arcs of the show and of the season, and I've missed it so much.
Yeah, exactly. Last time that we talked about it, I know that Edmund and I discussed a little bit the possibility, as I was trying to maybe find a silver lining to this season up to this point, to say that they focus so much on these comedic side trips, so to speak, because they knew that once they pulled the trigger, as they did in these last couple episodes with the whole Gadriel thing and and really kicking off both the angelic and demonic civil wars, and really tilting all of these, tilting over all the tables and kicking all the anthills, that they couldn't really go back to that. Not easily. So it's almost like they did all of that earlier this season to get it out of the way while the status quo was still relatively in place, because going forward, they're going to have to kind of be in that season 4 really ugly, dark mode. And yeah, I'm hoping that they don't lose track of it as they go along here, that they can really stick to it, because they need to, in my opinion. Edmund, how about you? Your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, certainly. Yeah, I mean, as the... I guess I can still call myself the newbie, but now that I'm now in my fourth season, of course, I can.
It's all relative.
I definitely do. Yeah, I definitely do see that this season. I mean, it some of the stuff going on just really, and one of the biggest things was this whole thing of keeping Crowley in the basement all this time, and it was just so nice to finally get him out. And I really do hope it was what you're just mentioning, that if they felt they had to get all the tongue-in-cheek stuff out of the way early, because now that the setup's begun, I'm starting to feel really excited about where this can go. And it even felt like they were kind of acknowledging that with the way Dean and Castiel are talking about it, both Dean's issues with of just berating himself and how could I be so stupid for doing this, and it was like, yeah, we were kind of thinking that as you were going along.
We're not going to disagree with you.
Yeah. And even the whole Castiel stealing the grace out of another angel thing that they did kind of give that a little bit of a shrug and a wink as well. But I did like the thing of that yes, he's got his grace bag, but his wings are still broken. That's why he's got to find Lincolns to drive around in. And also because this show always has to have people driving around in vintage cars. but yeah, certainly having the main characters finally back, finally unleashed, and I also did particularly like that expelling Gadriel means that apparently Toma Paniquette will be playing more of a role as the season goes along. So it wasn't just that one off at the beginning. That was setting him up for down the line. So that's certainly a nice guest star to have. They are back, and let's just keep our fingers crossed that the wind up of this monster conflict that's set up is as good as we hope.
Yeah, absolutely. I can't say enough good things about this episode, so I think I'll let it stand for itself and just say again, this is my favorite of the season, and I gave it a 9. How about you, Bronston? Which would you give it?
Yeah, I'd happily give it a 9 as well. This was strong, character driven, story driven, just everything that I love about Supernatural when it's working for what feels like the first time in a while.
Yeah, since the end of last season. How about you, Edmund?
Then 9's all around.
Okay, sounds like a great place to wrap up, and we're going to go ahead then and bring this show to a close, and we'll be back next time with the rest of this week's material. Yeah, there was quite a lot. So until next time, thank you, gentlemen, for all your help for this episode. And definitely, if you want to give us some comments, you can follow us on Twitter at Critical Myth, or you can go and like our page on Facebook. Again, that's Critical Myth.
You can give us feedback by visiting the website over at www.criticalmyth.com. Just check out the entries for the show and leave us a comment. If you can't find it, just go all the way up to the top of the page. There's a link there, and there is also a drop-down box for all of the shows we talk about. So please let us know what you think.
Or you can go over to the VOG Network page and go over to the forums, and we have a dedicated forum for the show. You can leave comments there for us.
You can also email your feedback to feedback@criticalmyth.com, or you can leave us a review on iTunes.
Or you can call our Google voicemail line at 908-977-MYTH. That's 908-977-6984.
And don't forget that Critical Misuse of any and all copyright material is only intended for parody, news analysis, critique, or for educational purposes, as provided within United States Code Title 17, also known as the Fair Use Act. Please don't sue us.
And the comments and opinions of the Critical Myth podcasters and reviewers are not necessarily those of its distributors, partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. So until next time...